Garrett Ilsen here, your celeb expert and your celeb savant. Celeb Savant is a weekly entertainment show. We have long-form career retrospective type interviews with celebrities, singers, actors, and industry experts. Sandy Tom is a Scottish singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist. She became widely known in 2006 after her debut single, I Wish I Was a Punk Rocker with Flowers in My Hair, topped the UK singles chart in June of that year, as well as in Australia, Ireland, and her native Scotland. The single became the biggest selling single of 2006 in Australia, where it spent 10 weeks at the top of the ARIA singles chart. Sandy has released 6 studio albums throughout her career: Smile, It Confuses People, The Pink and the Lily, Merchants and Thieves, Flesh and Blood, The Covers Collection, and Ghosts. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Sandy Tom. Where do we find you in the world? What's happening in your life, and how are you doing?
Well, I'm in Scotland. I moved back to Scotland just over a year ago. Before then, I was living out in the Middle East. I am doing good. I am just getting ready to do some more writing for my next album. Okay. Well, my next few songs, shall we say. And yes, I'm doing very well, thank you.
So now let's rewind. Let's take it all the way back, whatever age it was. So the hybrid version, or the long version, of Sandy's entertainment journey. So at what age did you know, okay, cool, this is where I want to go? And how did that lead to the next levels of the entertainment world and where we are today?
Probably from, I would say from about the age of six or seven, I was very interested in singing. And my dad would often sing and play his guitar. So, you know, I always really enjoyed watching him sing and play. And that just kind of grew arms and legs throughout my life to when I was around 12. Because I was a keen piano player as well. So I started writing songs when I was about 12, 13 years old. You know, my parents encouraged it. I did my first recording when I was 14, three songs. I did my first radio interview when I was 14.
Wow.
And then I joined a band and I started playing live and, you know, in events and even in like bars and clubs and all sorts of things. And so that was sort of my first taste of live performance. And everybody loved it. Everybody loved listening to me sing. So I pretty much just grew up with that always being the most prominent thing in my life till I was about 17. And then I was accepted into the Liverpool Institute of Performing Arts, where I went for 4 years and did a degree. But while I was doing my coursework, I had my band also, and then we would, you know, play again. All the clubs and the bars and the Liverpool music scene. And I was just kind of cultivating a sound, and I was also part of a gospel choir as well when I was there. So yeah, just immersed in music really throughout. When I finished there, I moved to London, which is what everybody does. And I started writing a lot as a songwriter, working with various different people and completely different genres, very poppy. I became very good at writing very classically pop songs. That's sort of what I was doing most. That I was writing with other people, writing top lines, like as in writing melodies and lyrics, and then I would sing them and vocal them and demo them and stuff. So I did a lot of that in the early years. And then, you know, that's where I formed my initial team of people, like my publisher, my manager, who I then met, and I went on a journey of writing so many different songs, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 songs or whatever, until I got to the point where I wrote Punk Rocker.
Yes.
And the rest of that album. So, and a lot of people from my past had an involvement in that album. One of my co-writers and my one of the producers was somebody that I had met at uni. The two people that played with me on stage, primarily all over the world, were also two people that I'd met in uni. So a lot of the people that I met in Liverpool came with me on that journey and played a significant role in and the development of the sound and the music and everything. That brought me up to like around 2005, and I'd just, been grafting until that point, until I wrote that song. And then that song was the moment where everyone sort of went, oh, that's special. So, and then when you finally get to that moment, then the game changes a little bit.
So to unpack a little bit of what you mentioned, so you said you're playing guitar and piano. So what, as a child, so what drew you to those instruments, and did you prefer either one of them, or you enjoy equally both of them?
I was playing piano because, my family were all very musical. My dad's sister, he was a piano teacher, so
Hmm.
I naturally was just put into piano lessons, and I was somewhat scared of her. She was quite, she was a bit scary. So
Okay.
I did do pra I did practice, and I became good at it. I didn't pick up the guitar until later on in life when I was actually
Okay.
studying, and I started playing. And then probably because of my dad, who was always playing 12-string guitars, I started playing 12 strings, and I pretty much never play anything else on stage other than a 12-string. But those were just the tools for writing, I think,
Okay.
more than anything, because I was writing a lot as well. Those were just naturally the instruments that you would go to write on. And then I also play blues harp, is blues harmonica. Play the harmonica, but primarily in the style of blues, which was something that I also, my manager said, you should learn how to play the harmonica. So I did.
Okay.
And that's kind of cool. Like, I don't, that's not a common thing for women to do
Yeah.
anyway. That
And you said that you started performing at the age of 14. You did your first show.
yeah.
So pre to that time and getting onto the stage, once you'd finished that first performance, was it as what you expected, or how was it different to what you expected compared to your mind's thoughts of how it would potentially be?
Probably quite different because, I was playing, there was one place that I used to play at where the keyboard we balanced on the end of the pool table.
Okay.
And, there was no monitors, there was nothing. It was
Yeah.
just, just try and hear yourself if you can. So it
Yeah.
was all very rough around the
Yes.
edges. So I'm sure that's not what I had envisaged as a child, spinning around in my room when I thought about being on a stage. But that equally, the experience of getting applause and to fill up a room of people with all this energy and for them to love what you're doing, and the payoff is still the same. So I definitely love that because I think it also helped me in my confidence because I was never particularly, as a child or just in my everyday life, I was never particularly over the top or chatty or, I was never the center of attention, ironically. So for me, it was my place where I could perform, and through that, it definitely helped me to be more confident. So as much as it was not what I had envisaged, it was very beneficial to have done all of that. And musically as well, like the people I was in the band with were much older than me, so they helped me to learn about all these bands from the 60s and the 70s that I would have never naturally have, leaned towards if I hadn't have been in that band. But then obviously I went on to perform in so many different environments and different situations in different stages and in all over the world. So, each and every one of those experiences have something great about them in different ways.
And the difference between you started writing as a teen compared to when you mentioned you became good at writing pop songs. So was it because you worked at your craft over a period of time, which allowed it to get great, or was there a transition over time that allowed that to happen? What was the writing process? And is that process still the same process that in how you write songs today?
Well, interestingly, when you're younger and you haven't gone to college and you haven't learned about formats and songwriting, whatever the styles and all these things, You just kind of innocently blurt out whatever it is you want to say. And strangely enough, nowadays, the modern pop song very much is just blurting out what you want to say. You know, if you think about, let's say, like Capaldi or Adele, so many of the songs, they're like spoken word. It's like something you would say to somebody in a conversation. Maybe I'll find someone like you. You know, so like things like that, like they're not like they don't turn heads lyrically.
Yes.
There's an honesty in it.
Yeah.
And when you're young, that's kind of where you're at. You don't try and overdo it. You just say what you need to say, and like you're talking to your friend. And then you know, for me, which is what I did, and then I went to college, and then I learned, and then I learned about structures and formats and in the professional side of things. And so then when I went and I wrote predominantly for other people in the beginning, but I delivered something that at that time pop was very contrived, and I was able to write those very contrived, cheesy, over the top songs, using all of these tools that I'd learned. But the thing that I never did was I never really applied that logic to myself. So for my own music, my own writing, there's a completely different process to when I sit down and write a song for someone else,
Okay.
which is weird, but I kind of compartmentalize that in my brain. I don't ever write a song in the same way that I would write it for someone else. So I do approach the two things very differently. But it's strange how, you know, sometimes, like, you know, people would say when the things that children say, like out of the mouths of babes, there's something so innocent about what children say, and they just sort of say exactly how it is, you know,
Yeah.
which is strangely how people are trying to now write songs with that innocence again. It's also, for me, it's great because I'm having to sort of deconstruct to a degree all of the things that I've been taught to do, and just go back to when I was 12 years old and I didn't really know what I was doing, but then what I did was very authentic and real. So yeah, that's kind of how I've ironically arrived back at the same place where I was when I was 12 as a songwriter.
This deconstruction you mentioned from going back to what you learned to where you were at 12, is it an easy process or are you finding it a bit challenging?
It is challenging to a degree because I think sometimes with writing songs, songwriters do feel the need to come up with some genius metaphorical language and, oh wow, you know, the real head turning lyrics. And it is sometimes hard to be simple. Especially if you are very talented and you can overcomplicate things, you tend to. The hardest thing definitely is to make something simplistic great. So if you can sit down like it, you know, irrespective of the changing of times, and no matter what the different genres that come and go or whatever styles, the three chords and the truth will never get old. So yeah, it is the hardest thing to sit down and just do something that's so basic. Just sit down, play three chords, and write a song, but say something that everybody can relate to, and in the most conversational way. And yeah, and I do think that that is what really tunes in nowadays, that people really tune into that type of writing. It is hard. You do want to over embellish things. You want to use colorful language, you know, you
Yes.
want to put all these things into practice that you've learned. So it is difficult. Yeah.
So going back onto the journey, so from the punk rocker song and that explosion of, success, were you expecting it? How did that go onto the next phase of the next a number of years? Tell us the next part of the journey.
No, I don't think anybody ever expects it. I think you can hope for it and dream about it. You know, when you're an aspiring artist, sure, you hope that you're going to be super su successful at some point, but I don't think you can ever foresee. You definitely can't ever predict how that's going to happen. And I definitely never predicted that I would write a song as odd and kooky as punk rocker, and that would be my turning point. So yeah, it was very surreal and unexpected. And almost so surreal that it was like it wasn't really happening. You sort of don't quite get it at the time because life was so crazy. All of a sudden, it just got so crazy. And I think that probably the one thing that's hardest for most people in that position is the idea that suddenly you're of such importance. I think that's the one thing that, because so many people in my industry in this position are so very reserved and sort of shy and don't think all this of themselves in real life. And so when you become this person of importance, it's kind of odd and you just sort of go, why? So yeah, that was all really a bit strange, but was amazing. So for a long time, I just was so busy, and all of a sudden I was all over the world and exhausted as well, but in a good way because it was so much work. And doing all these interviews all of a sudden that nobody'd ever trained me to do, and all these different things, all these photo shoots that nobody'd ever trained me to do, and all these things that I'd never really done before. So it was a very steep learning curve. And I think for me, I felt that pressure of doing something that was of equal measure. I think that was the biggest thing, was can you write that song again? But I think, and strangely enough, that's all. It's kind of where I'm sitting at right now because I've never really tried. That was the thing. I thought, no, I couldn't. Why would you want to do that?
Yeah,
It's a
exactly that.
unique thing. So it was a very rushed process to do my next album, and I sort of think I would have much preferred to have gone away for a few years and worked on it and really given enough, or been given the time that I took to do the first one again. And then I do think it probably would have been a slightly different story, but it was very like bang, 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 get the next record out, keep riding the train, so to speak. And I didn't feel that the second album was as authentic as the first, and in wasn't as authentic in as to me as an artist. So, but then there were so many people involved in the process. There were so many people to please. There were so many voices, so many opinions. Sometimes I think there's too many and it can dilute things, it can come so far away from the original vision, you sort of lose sight of what it was you wanted to do initially. Yeah, I think perhaps there was too much of an emphasis on trying to recreate the same thing again. But the journey for me after that, there was a lot of challenges too, because I didn't continue down the road with this major label, and then I started my own, and then went on a completely different journey as an indie artist. But I'm very resilient and very determined and strong, so I kept going, and then I kept releasing albums. And in a way, it was kind of weird because I got the creative freedom back, so I could do what I wanted to do. But they didn't have the power of the wheel, of the machine, as we call it, behind me. So yeah, but I mean, I had such a very interesting journey since then, making different records, working with different people. And at the end of the day, no matter where I went or who I worked with, everybody still recognized at least that, wow, you're a really good singer and you can write songs. And so there was an appreciation for that. To some degree, I sort of got almost came away from the novelty of the first songs, the first album's success, and sort of wiped the slate clean to an extent, with some of those records that I made. And they weren't huge, massive worldwide smash hits, but then that's just because I didn't have that machine again, So you do what you can with what you have. It's not never a reflection of the quality of the music. There's so many unbelievably talented artists that don't see the light of day. It's just about what people get sort of drip fed in the end. What do they hear?
These days, there's so many indie artists, independents, that it's becoming more of the norm. So you were potentially one of the first ones of the pack leading and it's shown the people that it doesn't have to be the machine.
I mean, it's a hard journey, and I think that the lessons that you learn along the way are that you can't run an indie label like you're on a major. You have to change things. You have to do so many things differently. But the great thing about the evolution of the music business and how it's all changed over the years is that, yeah, like I came out at like the turning of the tide, you know, the digital revolution had just begun. And then throughout that last sort of 10, 15 years, the power, the dial has moved to, and it continues to move back towards the powers back with the artist. Because we live in the age of information, and so you are discoverable now. You weren't before. Because the mainstream media, the radio in particular, had the power to make or break you, but now it doesn't. Yeah, so it's a really healthy place now where it is in terms of if you're savvy enough and you understand what you have to do, then yeah, you can still be very popular. So yeah, it's very interesting the way that it's all evolved.
So that leads me to the next question, because we were discussing earlier before we started recording about CDs and so forth. So I love me a CD. I love the aesthetics of holding something, the energy of saying thank you to you guys, because that's my way of saying thank you for all the hard work. I'm not sure if you're aware that the physical is making a great comeback. The vinyls, the cassette CDs, great comebacks. Then we got these digital platforms that people are also consuming music on. What is your perception of the physical versus the digital?
Well, I think I agree. Like I still, of course, I like tangible things to be, and like you talk about energy, sure, I completely agree and appreciate that there is an object, you hold it, and there's there you've put your something into that, so you can, there's an energy from that. I'm really happy that it's coming back, and I think there is a really neat way to interweave it all. Strangely enough, the Web3 is a really interesting setup where, you're talking about something that's so intangible that's living literally on a blockchain in the middle of whatever for perpetuity. But at the same time, you've got this sort of model where you can build assets onto these intangible objects that are tangible. It's almost like going back to like when you used to like order your magazines through the post every month, and you've got this sort of fan club mentality, where you've got like little things. Oh, I can get a lyric sheet, or I can get a signed CD, or so Web3 is like reintroducing the idea of these like tangible assets as and it's like in exchange for your loyalty, which is very old school. So yeah, I think there's a way to bring it all together. I would be really chuffed to be able to do something again, because for a long time I didn't actually bother pressing records. Really, it just sort of went, it just disappeared. I would also like it to be, because it's even when you market products these days, you're talking about delivering assets that like the audio is not even like 2 minutes long, it's like 1.5 minutes, because everything is in like short form, TikTok. No, there's attention span has gone halved. And so I would love to be able to also think that, we go back to this place where we go, we make an organic record, we take the first take, we press it on a vinyl, and like old school. That would be brilliant, because it also holds people accountable to whether they're actually talented or not. Yeah, I think it will. Everything is cyclical anyway, so it's bound to reappear, it's bound to reemerge. And in doing so, it's coming back, and it's like, retro, and which is funny. So
I've
yeah, I think
stayed
that would be
retro because I was
really cool.
giggling because I still get my magazines delivered in
Yeah,
my
there you go.
subscriptions and I still get my
Exactly.
books, my DVDs, and all those things. So I'm becoming
Well,
trendy
you're never going to go out of fashion.
now. There we go.
Well, I was having a chat with my boyfriend the other day about cargo pants, the
Yes.
cargo trousers. We're like, when did they become like super popular again? Everybody now wears cargo trousers, and we're like, well, he just never stopped wearing them. So he's got his from like 20, 30 years ago. So he's like back in fashion.
Back in fashion.
Like all of a sudden the workman's trousers came back again, So yeah, everything does inevitably come around again. So yeah, it'll be interesting to watch that resurgence.
I love this game. Now, I know if I
Okay.
had to ask you this question in 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 hours, 2 months, I know your answer will be different every single time, and I recognize that. I'm not saying favorite, but if you had to push play to five songs by other artists once we finish this interview, What would those five songs be and by whom?
Oh wow. A Case of You, Joni Mitchell, Lately, Stevie Wonder, Landslide, Fleetwood Mac. What else? Purple Rain, Prince.
One more.
One more. I don't know, maybe something a bit more. I probably should throw a modern song in there. let me think. I'm gonna go with Chandelier. See ya.
Oh, okay. Cool mix. Excellent.
Yeah.
Sandy, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
What would I like to say? I'm gonna say live in the end. That's what I'm gonna say.
Live in the
If I had
end.
any one piece of advice to anybody, if you ever want to achieve anything in this life, if you ever, whatever it is you want, whatever it is you want to see, whatever it is you want to be, whoever it is you want to be, wherever, with whoever, live in the end, as in live as if it was already yours.
Yes.
Live as if it was already yours. Feel how you would feel if it was already yours. Live like it, because it does. It already exists. In the field of infinite possibility, everything exists. So live in the end. Live as if you are the one you want to be,
I love that.
and you'll pull that reality into your towards you like a magnet.